Welcome to the Left of Lansing podcast with your host, Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. A, dare we say, entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how we can best make Michigan's political machine work for the people. And now, live from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another edition of the Left of Lansing podcast, a 2021 edition. I'm Pat Johnston. Yeah, I hope you do remember me, host of this fine podcast. And yes, I'm still around, despite being virtually absent during the entire 2020 campaign. Look, last year was a difficult year. I don't have to tell you that. Dealing with the pandemic, social unrest, a political campaign in which the question of whether or not democracy would survive in our country or else slip into further fascism, all those things were on the table. So naturally, it made perfect sense as to why I decided to do very few podcasts last year. I mean, it was such a boring and non-consequential year, right? Besides, I got hooked on more important things like The Queen's Gambit, Cobra Kai, and Bridgerton on Netflix. So I just didn't have time to talk about ways to save the country and other nonsense like that. Okay. I think you can tell I'm not serious. Although, I did love The Queen's Gambit a lot. And while campy and completely insane, I did nostalgically enjoy Cobra Kai. Now, my wife, who is the technical advisor of this fine podcast, is trying to get me to watch the rest of Bridgerton, despite it being very soap opera-y. But Shonda Rhimes is behind it all, so I guess I will watch some more episodes before making my final judgment. All right, now that's been said, I would like to apologize for being absent for perhaps one of the most important elections in decades. I wish I had other excuses other than the following. I simply got burned out. I went all in with this podcast in 2019 while still keeping my 40 to 45 hour per week day job. And while I had a great time putting together this weekly podcast, my brain and my body finally collapsed. I still kept a presence on Twitter, as many of you probably knew, and I also did have my daytime radio gig, but that's really all I could give. And it really has caused me to do some re-evaluating or re-examining on what exactly I would like to do with Left of Lansing, or LOL as I like to call it. This podcast has really given me a platform where I can be myself, and where I can share my thoughts and feelings on a number of social, political, racial, environmental, popular culture, and even sports issues affecting this great state of Michigan. And I've had the pleasure of speaking with so many awesome people who wake up every day with the goal of sparking real, progressive change to make Michigan a great place to live. And since I am an audio dork, believe it or not, I love doing post-production work each and every podcast. That's my favorite thing to do. I love sitting in front of a computer and doing editing and mixing music and all of that stuff. That's just something I love to do. Yes, like I said, I'm an audio dork. However, that takes time. And by the end of 2019, my energy bank dried up. Add to that, some responsibilities at my day job also increased as well. So that's why I just wasn't able to podcast as much as I wanted to in 2020. I'm thinking I will try to post a podcast once every other week for the short term. That way, I'm not pressuring myself to get something posted each and every week. And that way, I will also sound more energized for each and every episode. All right, to keep you more engaged. My personal goal here for Left of Lansing is that I would like this to be a full-time gig. It always has been my ultimate goal. But I still need to help pay the bills around here, which is why I still have my day job. Highlighting those of you who work so hard at stopping Michigan's extreme right wing to turning this state into a perpetual ruin is the point of this podcast. If there's one silver lining, and I've talked about this before, but I'll say it again. If there is one silver lining that came from Trump's 2016 win, it's that so many of you got involved in Michigan's political future. Now, look, I know that's a hell of a price to pay, considering what we've endured as a country with Donald Trump occupying the White House. I don't diminish the harm and the destruction that he and his regime have caused to millions of Michiganders and Americans in general. But a large swath of Michiganders who weren't as politically engaged before did become engaged after the 2016 disaster. And even more importantly, people realized that while changing Washington, D.C. from red to blue was indeed essential, they also realized that change can happen faster on the state and local levels. If there's one place where the right-wing outmaneuvered progressives ever since the 1960s, politically speaking, it's that they learned in order to gain real, immediate power, you have to control the city councils, school boards, state Supreme Courts, and state legislatures. And that's what happened here in Michigan, thanks in large part to big money donors like the DeVos family and members of Michigan's extreme Chamber of Commerce. But thanks to groups like, of course, the Michigan Democratic Party or Indivisible Michigan or Run for Something or United Michigan and so many other organizations, many Michigan progressives got into the fight in 2018. And many of them won and started giving us much-needed voices in our state's Capitol buildings, voices we hadn't heard in years. The voices of strong, smart, progressive women also became a force that hadn't really been heard from before, at least in those numbers. Add to that the victories of Governor Gretchen Whitmer, Attorney General Dana Nessel, and Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson, Michigan showed that voters will indeed support and vote for strong, progressive women as long as they give us something to vote for. If we need an example, though, if we need an example of how elections change the future for the good, all right, I'd like many of you to quickly imagine what life would have been like had Republican Bill Schuette won the governor's race, Republican Tom Leonard won the attorney general race, and Republican Mary Trader Lang would have won the Secretary of State race. I mean, that's a scary thought, isn't it? Very scary. I'm getting the shakes just thinking about it right now. I mean, just on the COVID-19 pandemic response alone, Bill Schuette would have joined hand in hand with right-wing terrorist sympathizer and state Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirkey in making sure that Michigan copied Florida's circus clown of a governor's COVID-19 strategy down there of opening up the entire state to whatever it wants. Bars open, restaurants open, everything open. So what? So what even if that means the weakest will die? It doesn't matter. The state is open because, America! Like Ebenezer Scrooge, Schuette and Shirkey would have adopted that fine principle of eliminating the surplus population so that way some people could dine in because, America! Now, if you think I'm being hyperbolic, please look up Mike Shirkey's We Have to Learn to Live with the Virus plan. All right, you can find it anywhere. Go to Michigan Advance. They've talked about it a lot there. One of my favorite publications, by the way, MichiganAdvance.com. Check it out. I mean, Mike Shirkey adopted the Ivan Drago's if he dies, he dies strategy. Okay, it wasn't a very good Ivan Drago from Rocky IV, but still, you get the point. And no, that won't be the only time I reference Rocky movies and character on this podcast. Yes, you are welcome. So, can you imagine how much worse we'd be in Michigan if we didn't have someone like Gretchen Whitmer in office? Everybody, elections have consequences, which is why I hope that we've learned that we must stay engaged. Think of this past election as if you can forget it, right? I mean, think, if we didn't have Attorney General Dana Nessel or Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson in power, do you truly believe Michigan Republicans would not have tried stealing this election for their dear leader? I mean, we saw how much they were willing to eliminate our votes. I'll talk more about that in the next segment, but you and I both know, had Republicans controlled those three state offices while controlling the state legislature and backed by their big money donors, Donald Trump would have been awarded our state's electoral votes despite losing by 150,000 votes. Now, speaking of the 2018 election, not only did we elect some great people to hold office, but progressive groups fought to get Proposition 3 on the ballot. That initiative granted voters the right to a no-reason absentee ballot, to same-day registration, and to vote a straight party ticket so that way we could find ways to make the voting process easier on everybody. For years, Michigan's Republican Party tried to find some really cute ways to stifle the vote because the less people vote, the more likely it is that Republicans will win. I mean, you know, they could try winning on the merits of their policies, but since their policies suck, they rely on good old-fashioned voter suppression. But here, you see, we found a way around those decades of long-built suppression through Proposition 3. And thanks to mail-in voting, which turned out to be huge during a once-in-a-century pandemic, more people got to cast their vote in this election. The right wing is furious about that, and they are furious with Secretary of State Benson for making the application process to get an absentee ballot easier. You see, our Secretary of State is so crazy because she believes, you know, the more people we get involved in our democratic process, the better. I know. What does she think this is? America? Anyway, now, can you think how Benson's opponent would have handled the application process? Do you really think Mary Trader Lang would have been as enthusiastic about sending out applications? You know better. That's why every election matters. That's why 2022 is just as important for Michigan as 2020. And we'll have new congressional districts thanks to another voter initiative giving Michiganders a say on how their districts are drawn up. We've seen what could happen if Republicans defeat Governor Whitmer, Attorney General Nessel, Secretary of State Benson, and many of our strong state senators and state representatives. If you need one quick example of what could happen with complete Republican rule, let's talk about Aaron Van Langenveld. He is a Republican on the Michigan Board of Canvassers who refused to give in to the quack, QAnon, racist, right-wing, whacked-out conspiracy theories that Michigan's election was rigged against Donald Trump. You know those theories. We've heard them all. Well, the extreme Republican Party here in Michigan is throwing him out. His term is up, and they ain't asking him to come back for yet another term. Oh, no. They're throwing him out so they can put in a right-wing zealot hack, someone like Linda Lee Tarver, who joined in a lawsuit claiming that there was election fraud here in Michigan. Of course, that lawsuit failed, like so many others. And Tarver told the Detroit News that she would not have voted to certify the election, and she thought that canvassers had the duty to represent their party's interest. No, not the state's interest, their party's interest. She said party direction should be given great weight as well. According to the Detroit News and the Metro Times, Republicans have a few more hacks as possible replacements as well. So there you have it, everybody. Donald Trump did not cause the Republican Party to be extreme. The Republican Party was always extreme. We've known that here in Michigan, all right? We knew who Betsy DeVos was way before Donald Trump put her in as the Secretary of Education. God, that's so hard to fathom that Betsy DeVos was our Education Secretary for the last 4 years. Oh my God! So we know here in Michigan that the Republican Party is an extreme right-wing organization backed by some big money interests to allow it to disseminate its so-called values across the state and also across the rest of the country. Yes, it is a relief that Joe Biden is our president and Kamala Harris is our vice president. Glory, hallelujah, we have sanity back in charge. And I do believe they are the right people for this time. And yes, we also have power here in Michigan, but as we saw with what happened last spring at our state capitol building and with what happened at the United States Capitol on January 6, 2021, these anti-democratic with a small d extremists are not going away. They've been around for decades. They are still here with or without Donald Trump. Coming up, I have to talk about how many Republicans, including my congressman, fought to nullify my vote. It's great to be back, everybody. Hold on. I've got more coming up.
A podcast devoted to helping fix the damn roads because Pat's tired of dodging potholes. It's the Left of Lansing podcast. The Left of Lansing podcast is available on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, and of course on leftoflansing.com. Now, back to Pat Johnston.
We've learned again that democracy is precious. Democracy is fragile. And at this hour, my friends, democracy has prevailed.
Ooh, that is correct. Democracy is fragile, as we just learned. Hey, this is another episode of LOL, Believe It or Not. I'm Pat Johnston, and what a day it was at our nation's capital on January 20th. President Joe Biden, and by the way, it's awesome to say that, and Vice President Kamala Harris, it's even more awesome to say that, were both inaugurated, and President Biden gave a real solid speech, I have to say. It was the exact opposite of that Donald Trump insane carnage of America address that he gave 4 years ago. I mean, the guy said that he was pro-America, yet that speech pretty much said America sucks. And that was Donald Trump. We know how much he really doesn't care about America. You know, I tweeted recently that I'm not much in a celebratory mood at this moment, that we defeated fascism to keep our democracy. That's great. But I'm feeling more relieved than, celebratory. I just am. I'm more relieved than anything else. Please don't misunderstand me. Obviously, I'm beyond thrilled that we have a decent guy like Joe Biden in the White House because, unlike when Trump was occupying the White House, progressives have a real chance at persuading President Biden to our side on many issues. And to his credit, he's already reversed a few of Trump's draconian policies through executive order, like reversing the anti-American Muslim ban or halting the environmentally destructive Keystone XL pipeline. Sorry, Justin Trudeau up in Canada. Or eliminating that white supremacist 1776 education screed. Or, he also signed an executive order mandating masks inside of federal buildings. Those are good things. So, you know what? I am hopeful just after 2 days. However, we cannot forget how Republicans, especially those here in Michigan, fought to suppress our votes. And they fought to reverse the outcome of the election in which Joe Biden destroyed Donald Trump by 7 million votes and over 150,000 votes here in Michigan. And let's not forget that we had three Republican congresspeople in Michigan, the newly elected Lisa McClain of Bruce Township, Jack Bergman of Water Street, and Tim Walberg of Tipton, who all voted to decertify presidential electors in Pennsylvania and Arizona. And let's not forget how Bergman, Walberg, along with Bill Huizenga of Zeeland, and my congressman, John Molinar from Midland, how they all signed on to a ludicrous lawsuit filed by that nutty Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton that wanted to nullify Michigan's, Georgia's, Pennsylvania's, and Wisconsin's votes. Now, naturally, none of these Republican congressmen or congresswomen questioned the validity of their elections because, well, you see, they're not from Detroit, if you catch my drift. Michigan Republicans have always used that term Detroit as a dog whistle in, that Detroit is a majority black city. Now, Trump didn't exactly use Detroit as a dog whistle. No, he pretty much said America couldn't trust votes coming out of Detroit, Philadelphia, or Atlanta because black people can't be trusted. Michigan Republicans went along with Donald Trump. Michigan Republicans in the state legislature as well went all in. State Senator Ed McBroom and State Representative Matt Hall, for example, welcomed Trump sycophant Rudy Giuliani to the state capitol so that way he could spew lies for hours about election fraud in Detroit, even though there was absolutely zero evidence. And a number of House Republicans signed their names to that Texas lawsuit. One of them was Matt Maddock of Milford. Now, Maddock and his wife, Michonne Maddock, who's going to be the Michigan GOP co-chair, thought at one point that they could serve as alternate electors and cast their votes for Trump. Hey, not only that, but they called for civil war on social media. And not only that, but they also attended the D.C. riot that happened at the Capitol a few weeks ago. Now, there's no evidence that they went into the Capitol building, but Maddock did give a speech that day. And we learned last week that State Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirky had a sit-down chat with three Michigan militia leaders just a month before the plot to kidnap the governor was revealed. Historian Heather Cox wrote a long post on her Facebook page. It was a great read, detailing how extreme right-wing domestic terrorism has existed throughout our time here in the United States, and that what we witnessed at the nation's Capitol building and here in Michigan follows that pattern. Here's what she wrote, and I'm quoting here. For the past 4 years, Trump and his enablers have tried to insist that unrest in our country is caused by Antifa, an unorganized group of anti-fascists who show up at rallies to confront right-wing protesters. But the Department of Homeland Security this summer identified anarchists and anti-government extremists as the most significant threat against law enforcement. According to DHS, They are motivated by their belief that their liberties are being taken away by the perceived unconstitutional or otherwise illegitimate actions of government officials or law enforcement. Those anti-government protesters are now joined, quite naturally, by white supremacists as well as other affiliated groups. So we can't be surprised, according to Heather Cox. So now Republicans have to try to make you forget about everything that happened. You know, here in Michigan, the Republican Party, which did everything in its power to stop democracy in its tracks, is now refusing to work with Governor Whitmer on COVID relief. Right-wing Republican Thomas Albert of Lowell, for example, who is the House Appropriations Chair, is now threatening to withhold any kind of COVID spending unless the governor opens up restaurants. I already mentioned how much I enjoy reading Michigan Advance. Its editor and friend of this podcast, Susan Demas, tweeted the following that I think perfectly encapsulates what I've been trying to articulate for the past year when it comes to this odd need by some in the right wing to dine inside restaurants. Susan said, "If you don't care about my family's health, I'm not sure why I'm obligated to care about your business." Damn. Thank you very much there, Susan. We have a Democratic president with a Democratic majority in the House and Senate. We could easily give aid to these struggling small businesses like restaurant owners, but the Republican Party refuses to budge as they are suddenly now citing concerns about debt and deficits. And you always know whenever Democrats are occupying the White House because that's when Republicans become aware of debt and deficits. By the way, I'm currently reading a book called The Deficit Myth by Stephanie Kelton. Someday I'd love to interview her on this podcast. Her book does illustrate exactly how our federal government is designed to run deficits as our country is, you know, going through some tough times, like now. Republicans, including those here in Michigan, are hoping that you will quickly erase the last 4 years from your mind and that you'll begin blaming Governor Whitmer and President Biden for everything they caused. They want you to forget how they coveted white supremacy for the last 4 years. Well, actually, longer than that, of course. But how they have coveted white supremacy, how they have coveted extreme right-wing terrorists in desperate attempts to remain in power. They want you to forget how one of their members, State Senator Dale Zorn of Ida, wore a Confederate mask on the Senate floor just days after all of those right-wing rallies that happened at our state capitol. They want you to forget how some of those very people that attended those rallies tried to kidnap and kill Governor Whitmer. They want you to forget all that, and they are hoping that they can repeat that playbook of the Obama years, which is to obstruct everything so that you'll blame Democrats while forgetting who put us here in the first place. So that's why I'm not much in a celebratory mood at the moment. Michigan's Republicans, along with Republicans in D.C., are going to do everything they can to remain in power or to regain power while refusing to help us during a pandemic and during one of the worst economic disasters this country has ever seen. That's not to say I don't have hope. On the contrary, this past election gave me some hope. It's Michigan's Republicans who've aligned themselves with the extreme right wing and are still backed by big money. They're the ones who don't give me hope. And that's why we have to keep fighting. We cannot celebrate and then move on. We have to keep fighting. Do not forget. Coming up, I'm going to take a counterpoint to some comments that were made on one of my favorite Michigan political podcasts. That's all coming up here in just a second. You're listening to LOL.
It's progressivism with passion. It's the Left of Lansing podcast, where Pat Johnston shines a light on Michigan's progressive movement. Contact Pat at leftoflansing@gmail.com. And don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Now, back to Pat Johnston.
Hey, thank you again for spending a little time to give this podcast a listen. And like the podcast voice, Annie just told you, if you'd like to give me an email, it's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Time now for the Left of Lansing Last Call. I've been holding on to this piece of audio ever since November 15th of 2020. Not that, you know, I'm obsessive or anything like that. No. It's from one of my favorite Michigan political podcasts, which is called The Michigan Politicast. The Michigan Politicast is hosted by Walt Sorg and Christine Berry. I've chatted with Christine on this podcast, and they do an exceptional job breaking down both Michigan, and they do an exceptional job breaking down the week in both Michigan and the nation's political news with a nice progressive spin. However, because we are progressives and not drone MAGA types or MAGA types, I never knew what to say that. I think it's MAGA. We're not drones like them. We are going to disagree on an issue from time to time. And I'd like to give a counterpoint to some comments that Walt made about AOC, or as he put it, the AOC wing of the Democratic Party. I'm going to play Walt's very comments from the Michigan Politicast from that November 15th, 2020 episode, just to assure everyone, including Walt and Christine, that I'm not cherry-picking or misrepresenting his views. And before I do that, I'd just like to say this, that I think Walt Sorg has done so much for Michigan's progressive causes throughout his career. Through his years in Lansing, both in media and in working in state government, Walt has a keen eye on the inside baseball machine of Lansing, which is why I enjoy listening to his take on many, many issues. And earlier, you know, I brought up how Michiganders voted for the Voters Not Politicians proposal back in 2018, which takes power out of the politicians' hands and into the hands of an independent commission to draw up congressional districts this year. You know, I've talked about that many times here and lauded all those who worked to get that proposal passed. Well, Walt Sorg was part of the Voters Not Politicians group to help push that major proposal across the finish line. That being said, he's an idiot here. No. I'm kidding. But I do take some issue with what he said about the last election and as to why Democrats lost seats in the U.S. House and weren't able to make more gains in the Michigan legislature. So here is Walt Sorg from that November 15th episode of the Michigan Politicast.
Yeah, I wanted to take a moment, too, to talk about these so-called tensions between the AOC wing of the party and the Biden wing of the party, basically the uber-progressives against the pragmatic progressives, which is the way I like to position the thing. What I see with the AOC wing is their problem isn't so much their policy, because most of their policies, when you break them down piece by piece and poll the American people on them, are pretty darn popular. People want to get rid of fracking. They want to reform the police. They want to see some controls on local policing so many African Americans aren't getting shot and killed by the police, and so we have better community relations. What they're really bad at is packaging and marketing their ideas and branding. You remember way back many, many weeks ago when this first defund the police thing came up, Christine, and I said, it's a really good idea and it's a really lousy brand. Mm-hmm. That's proven to be very true. I hate to say it, but I was right for once. And it doesn't happen often, but it does happen occasionally.
Well, look,
people want that to happen, but defunding the police, first of all, isn't really not an accurate description of what they're trying to do. What they're trying to do is redirect resources into public safety in a way that makes more sense from a cost-effectiveness standpoint and also from a social policy standpoint. That's what it's not defunding the police. It is reforming the police. But they came up with a stupid name. And then the Green New Deal, they blew that on the launch by inadvertently leaking a draft memo that talked about banning cows and airplane travel and cow farts and things that the Republicans could ridicule when that had nothing to do with the Green New Deal. The Green New Deal was all about things that people support, and that's attacking climate change, and that is moving more and more towards renewable energy sources and also towards more economic justice in the country. Those are all popular things, but the brand is bad, and they've got to learn how to brand. They really need to hire Frank Luntz, get him away from the Republicans, and have him assist them with branding, and they could make some progress. But they're too damn stubborn to understand that people actually don't look past the brand sometime into the policy. They think the policy will sell itself. Well, that's not how it works in politics. You've got to sell the brand first.
Okay, again, you can find the Michigan Politicast pretty much wherever you listen to your podcast. Or if you just visit MichiganPolicast.com, you'll find all of their episodes there. All right, so first, Walt is blaming the AOC wing of the Democratic Party for their lack of messaging. But he says their progressive policies are popular. He cites the popularity of the $15 minimum wage, which President Biden has included in his COVID recovery bill. He cited how the majority of Americans want to get rid of fracking and how many Americans want police reforms. Well, aren't those perfect examples of how successful progressives have been at framing those issues? They're popular now. I mean, I can remember a long time ago, you know, like during the Obama administration days, a $15 minimum wage was a pipe dream, as were all of those other issues. I mean, reducing fracking? Try getting that across a majority of Americans back during the W. Bush years. I got the feeling what really irked Walt and some other Democrats, to be honest, including former President Barack Obama, was the defund the police message that arose during the nationwide protest against the police killing of George Floyd. Now, whether or not that's a perfect slogan, I suppose only time will tell. Did the defund the police message hurt some Democrats? Maybe. It's possible. I haven't seen any real solid evidence of that as yet, although I've read some anecdotal tales. Still, I'm in need of some hard numbers on that one. Now, the defund message didn't seem to hurt other progressives running in Michigan and the rest of the country. In fact, centrist Democrats were the ones who ended up losing their seats in Congress, while staunch progressive ones like Katie Porter, who is in a light red district in California, she won her seat. All right, now that being said, I know that some of the state house races didn't go the way progressives wanted them to go. I know there were a few candidates who were fighting for seats in, I guess you could say, light red to redder districts. Maybe defund hurt their races a little bit on the periphery. Again, we don't know. All I'm saying is that we need more info on this whole defund the police and whether or not it hurt Democrats. As for the messaging itself, right or wrong, I think it's easy to understand. Defund means decrease, and it also means reform. Now, I suppose those activists in the streets who marched could have shouted, "We want police reform so we can redirect resources from public safety to make it more cost-effective." Okay, I guess I agree with that sentiment, but it's not a real catchy slogan. I mean, slogans are important in politics, right? $15 minimum wage? Bingo. New Green Deal? Bingo. Everybody knows what you're talking about. Defund the police? Bingo. We don't need a loser like Frank Luntz to make up our slogans. We're doing just fine without Frank Luntz. It's the activists on the streets who ran with that message due to the anger of watching unarmed black men and women die from the hands of police officers. Now, I honestly don't recall the Democratic Party adopting that language on their platform. Don't think they did. It wasn't shouted by any Democratic candidate, that I can recall. It was shouted from the streets, from the very people, many of them people of color in America, seeing these injustices occur far too frequently in their communities. And, you know, it's due to technology and smartphones that white America is seeing what black America has been telling us for years. White America, unfortunately, chose not to listen until now. Let me just say, defund the police or reform the police, it doesn't matter one bit to the right wing of America. You say reform the police, go right ahead. Go on with your bad self. They're only hearing defund the police. Or let's just be blunt. They reject any kind of reforms for police when it comes to how they treat people of color. Columnist Patty Waldmeier in the Financial Times recently wrote, and I quote, "Houston Police Chief Art Acevedo, who adamantly opposes defund, said that residents of the city don't want less policing, they want better policing. And what the U.S. really needs is massive investments in social services. If we can do it for COVID," he said, referring to massive spending on aid, "why can't we make smart investments in public health and addiction and mental health? If we don't, we are going to keep having this conversation about policing and never achieve a just and equitable nation." So, hate it or love it, as a slogan or an idea, defund is driving change because poverty is the key to urban violence. Perhaps this is just the snappy slogan we need to wake us up to doing what we should have done a half century ago. U.S. municipal budgets will never be the same again. Good stuff there by Patty Waldmeier. And as we saw with the D.C. riots, it's not a stretch to say that police do treat violent white fascists a tad bit different than, let's say, unarmed Black Lives Matter protesters who never once attacked our Capitol building. And it's also not a stretch to say that some of those white domestic terrorists, they think it's okay to attack the police. They think it's okay to kill the police because white privilege. As Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer honestly pointed out about that incident,
had the group of people who stormed our nation's Capitol been Black Lives Matter protesters, it's logical to conclude they would have been treated very differently.
I mean, that's the obvious truth, right? We just celebrated Dr. Martin Luther King Day, and if there's one part of King's legacy that I celebrate, it's that he made certain parts of America feel uncomfortable. You make America face some harsh truths, yes, they will recoil at first, maybe even a backlash. But they will eventually be forced to acknowledge some of those injustices. And as for the Green New Deal, well, both Biden and Trump discussed it during the presidential debates. It's out there. It's being talked about. People are being forced to talk about it. People are acknowledging that climate change is real and something has to be done. I just have to say this. That's not too shabby for a 31-year-old politician who just a few years ago held no political sway whatsoever. So I guess what I'm essentially trying to say is there's nothing wrong swinging for the fences, especially in politics. And it's about time that progressives start to move the Overton window for a change. So that's how I look at things when it comes to the AOC wing of the party. Do they make mistakes from time to time? Sure. But on the whole, they are exactly what the Democratic Party needs. You're listening to LOL.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you are hearing is by Wanderbeats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to my favorite progressive voice, Pat Johnston.
By the way, we've learned that there were some off-duty police officers who joined in with those other domestic terrorists at the D.C. riot. Guys, this is why we are urging for change regarding our policing strategies in this country. Don't you get it? The right wing doesn't want us to pay attention to our policing policies in this country. Instead, they'd rather want you to blame Black Lives Matter. They'd rather have you blame them rather than blaming themselves. Remember, the right wing blamed a former NFL quarterback for silently taking a knee during the national anthem. They blamed him for supposedly dividing the country. They didn't want to place the blame on white supremacy. No, can't blame white supremacy, which actually caused destruction and killed a police officer at the D.C. riot. Sometimes fighting for what is right is politically inconvenient, but that's the burden we progressives must bear. I'm about to get out of here, but I just wanted to bring up that as I was recording this podcast today, the state of Michigan's health department announced that restaurants can reopen on February 1st, allowing up to 25% capacity inside their dining rooms. America. So this decision was made due to the decline in our state's infection rates. One might want to give some credit to the leadership here in the state of Michigan. Maybe or maybe not. Republicans definitely won't. Now, there was a recent Stanford study I read showing that in highly populated metro areas, restaurants can really cause super spreader events. The study says restaurants should cap their capacity around 20% to lower the rate of infection spread. So Michigan is going about 5% above that threshold. Naturally, though, that's not good enough for Republicans, like the aforementioned and awful state Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirky, who wasted no time criticizing Governor Whitmer again. Now, if you recall, during the holidays, we learned that Shirky tested positive for COVID-19, and he was also seen sitting inside the state capitol without a mask when he was most likely contagious. Because remember, masks are nothing but a liberal plot to have the government tell us what to do. You know, like when businesses force us to wear shirts or shoes. Once recovered, Shirky then decided to use some good old-fashioned Donald Trump racism and xenophobia by calling it the Chinese flu. Mike Shirky really shows us who he is each and every day. It just shows how tone-deaf Mike Shirky can be, considering that just a few weeks ago, his hometown hospital, according to Crane's Detroit Business's Chad Livingood, had the most ICU patients than any other hospital in Michigan. And there's Mike Shirky saying, open it up, baby, open it up. And don't wear a mask. Shirky's complaining all the time that Governor Whitmer refuses to trust the people to deal with this virus. which I have to admit, he's kind of right about that, considering that, you know, he sat around without a mask after he was contagious, most likely. And if you recall, he also sat inside the Capitol last spring talking with right-wing extremists while not wearing a mask. So forgive me, Mike, if I'm not really sold that I can trust everyone to do the right thing when doing the right thing is nearly impossible for you. These guys always claim to be the party of responsibility, yet they never take responsibility. You know, like Rick Snyder and the Flint water crisis. Please, if you have to visit a restaurant, be careful and make sure there's decent social distancing. And if you're like me, who continues to do carryout, just remember to tip very, very well. It's not the small business's fault that Republicans in Washington are doing as little as possible to help them. Now, that's pretty much par for the game when it comes to Republican economic policies. They will help major corporations, but they will always screw small businesses. Which is why Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer must abolish the filibuster so real change can happen that will help millions of Americans during a pandemic and during one of the worst economic crises this nation has ever faced. Yes, Democrats and progressives, we ousted Donald Trump. But he set the country on fire, and it's going to take a long time to put out the flames. And that starts first by making sure Michigan gets it right. I have hope that Michigan can lead the way for real, true progressive change. We already have in many ways, but we've got to start building some momentum now to take over the state legislature in 2022. I mean, that's why I'm relieved, there's that word again, that we have Governor Whitmer and Attorney General Nessel and state senators like Jim Ananick, Erica Geis, Mallory McMorrow, Rosemary Baer, state representatives like Rachel Hood, Minority Leader Donna Lozinski, Stephanie Young, Joe Tate, Julie Rogers, Abraham Ayash, Kara Hope, Kira Harris-Bolden, Mary Manoogian, Kelly Breen, and Lori Pahutsky, who, by the way, I was thrilled was able to pull off another tough win last fall in her race. These people, and so many others, are lending a much-needed voice for us in Lansing. And for those who fell just short, including the few who are friends of this podcast, thank you for putting up a fight. That's the only way we win in the end. So, I will leave you with a hopeful message from poet laureate Amanda Gorman, who nearly stole the show at the inauguration with her poem, The Hill We Climb, and I loved this part of her poem.
We've learned that quiet isn't always peace, and the norms and notions of what just is isn't always just is.
Remember, everybody, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston. Just kidding, this thing isn't researched. And broadcasted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance provided by the wonderful Dr. Heather. And don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information and Pat's musical taste, if you can handle it. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.